Hello, everybody. I'm Paul Menzel.
And I'm Jim Conlon, and we're the Old Dogs.
If you've got about 20 minutes, grab a cup of coffee, pull up a chair, and join us.
In this episode, the Old Dogs ramble about speaking and listening. There seems to be more of the former than the latter. We present another Ads and Fads. We talk about the best deals you can get at dollar stores. We learn that it doesn't take much juice to power the human brain. Since it's Halloween, we wonder about the popularity of seances, and we clue you in on the benefits and dangers of skip-lagging. The Old Dog's conversation is with Fritz Coleman, longtime funny weatherman who is producing a series of specials on Tubi. Stay with us. Well, Paul, I'm looking at you, and I'm wondering what's on your mind.
Oh, I got plenty on my mind. You know, as we're recording this episode, all the chatter is about electing a new Speaker of the House. I don't think we have a shortage of Speakers of the House. What we have is a shortage of listeners of the House.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's a problem today. We are just not good at listening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or responding, for that matter.
Yeah, I agree. I try to get people to listen to me. And the louder I talk, the less they want to hear me. What do you think that's all about?
Well, you know what? I think people, they're a little too self-centered these days. And they are half-heartedly listening to other people. And what's going on in their mind is, what am I going to say next? Or let's talk about me.
That's about me. Oh, and even worse is if a person happens to mention something that is, I would say, probably significant, something happening in their life. Most people will immediately jump to, well, let's see if I can top that.
Yeah.
Sad.
So, I mean, how do you break that habit? I admit that I'm guilty of it. It's a serious problem. And, you know, I think it comes to light in Congress, where everybody wants to be heard and they outshout each other. If we just slow down the pace a little bit and force ourselves to listen to what the other person says, there's probably a lot more agreement than they realize when they're shouting.
And it also occurs to me that there are some people who are probably so afraid of not being listened to that they will not allow you to have an opening to speak. Have you ever noticed that there are certain people, they may be friends, who will talk and talk and talk and never allow you an opportunity to jump in?
Are these people married? I'm just curious.
No, but you're married, Paul, and you know, there are times when I think
I have a lot of things to say. They're all pent up. Yeah, what can I tell you? It is a serious problem, and I think we see it manifested in a lot of different forums where people feel that if they don't keep talking, that they're going to have to deal with a counter opinion that may have some logic.
My God. Yeah. I mean, perish the thought that someone might have an opinion that will change my mind.
Really. So what's the solution?
I think that
maybe how about a law that requires you to take 2 seconds between when another person stops talking and you start?
Wow. That would be a great idea.
Yeah. And what are the chances of that becoming a law, do you think?
Well, for one thing, I would cheat on the 2 seconds, Paul.
Our subject for Ads and Fads in this episode is a series of TV ads in the 50s and moving into the 60s. The spokesperson in the ad was a snobby man with a British accent and a well-trimmed beard. He was extolling the virtues of a brand of tonic water.
To solve our Ads and Fads quiz, supply the name of the tonic water and the name of the spokesperson. For extra credit and a heaping helping of admiration for your recall, name the elusive, sophisticated quality associated with the brand.
The Washington Post recently shared their thoughts on the best buys you can find in dollar stores. Now before you get huffy about never shopping there, the article revealed that nearly 90% of Americans have visited a dollar store.
Well, to the 10% who feel shopping at a dollar store is the retail equivalent of dumpster diving. Well, that would be me. I'm one of them. This may be a good time to floss or take out the recycling. For the rest of us, here are some suggestions for bargain shopping.
Party supplies, such as paper plates, cups, and napkins, are a reliable best buy, as are gift bags and greeting cards. Culinary supplies and kitchen tools, such as baking pans, spatulas, and storage containers, are another bargain. Spices are yet another good investment, but check the expiration date. You will want something in the current century.
Things to avoid are trash bags, medication, no-name batteries, and anything with an electrical plug. Usually, these items are obviously of inferior quality. What do you think of that, Paul?
You confess that you have never visited any of the various dollar stores.
Never.
My goodness, what a snob.
Well, really, yes. I wouldn't go to a place that would have me for a patron.
Oh, yeah, well, that's an old joke. but I will go there, and I have a couple of things I look for. Office supplies.
Mm-hmm.
And clips, any kind of clips.
What do you mean clips?
Potato chip clips, paper clips.
Oh, uh-huh.
Toenail clips, I don't know. but those handful of items I will frequently go to a dollar store because they will be cheap and accessible. Now, here's one thing. In the article, it said that the way to shop there is to compute per unit cost, so you can compare what's on the shelf with what's at your favorite grocery store. And my thought was, hey, I don't want to work that hard.
No, I'm going to have to run back and forth? Nah, I don't think so. But I'll tell you one thing I would buy that would probably not be on the good buy list. I'd buy a car there.
A car?
A car. C-A-R? Yeah, if I could get a car for a buck, you know,
man, you have just broadcast to the world, sucker.
Oh, no. We have this tidbit from the Interesting Facts website. The human brain runs on less power than a 60-watt light bulb.
You see, the human brain is a biological wonder, many times more efficient than invented substitutes. In fact, the human brain runs at about 20 watts. In addition, it doesn't heat up or fail to start, unlike our electronic competitors.
I'm not so sure about that. I think sometimes my brain, it just fails to start, Paul.
Oh, well, yeah, I can see that. So what do? You have your wife slap you around?
Yeah, just snap her fingers in front of my face. It works every time.
Okay, well, you ought to try a cup of coffee sometime.
You know, that old cartoon where the guy has an idea and the bulb shows up? No wonder my ideas are so bad.
Oh, you're going at half power, aren't you, these days? You're a 20-watt bulb?
Yeah, I think so.
The National Geographic recently published an article about the history of spiritualism in the United States. Interest in communicating with the dead peaked during times of war. One such period was after the Civil War. Another period was after World War I.
There were no formal organizations for spiritualism. It was practiced in private settings called seances, led by self-declared mediums who were supposed to have the ability to connect with the dead.
Many of these sessions involve participants sitting around a table in dim lighting, holding hands and waiting for signs from beyond. These signs might be tapping sounds, ringing bells, moving furniture, whatever, which indicated that a connection had been made.
Messages from the dead might involve automatic writing, knocks that spelled out words, or even the medium assuming the voice of the departed. Given the dim lighting and the willingness of participants, seances were often led by bogus mediums using magic tricks.
That does raise the question of whether or not you believe in it's possible to communicate with the dead. Well, you ever been to a seance?
No, never. No.
And would you go to one if I set one up?
Well, it depends. Who died?
Well, you got to troll. You got to go around, troll, and find out who's there. I would go with somebody famous. I would try to connect with, let's say, Shakespeare.
Yeah, we could finally find out for sure whether Shakespeare was actually the one who wrote all those plays.
Yes, although he probably wouldn't confess it, whoever it was.
Oh, you're right.
Well, I tell you, I have a tough time believing that. I sort of believe in ghosts, but I don't really believe in communicating with them. You know what I mean?
No.
It's okay for them to appear in movies. You don't have a career.
Oh, movie ghosts, yeah. Is there an actor's equity for ghosts, for example?
Well, the ghost writers would be involved in that, too.
All right, we're back with your ads and fads answers. The product was Schweppes Tonic Water. The spokesperson was Commander Whitehead, who was an actual commander, a title he earned during World War II. And the elusive quality accompanying the product was Schweppervescence.
Yeah, I had that. The website, by the way, recently featured an article about a travel hack the airlines hate called skip lagging. The practice is based on the fact that a direct flight to a city is often more expensive than a flight to another city that connects through the desired city.
Okay, here's how it works. Let's say you want to go to Chicago from Houston, and you find a flight to New York with a layover in Chicago that's $100 cheaper than a direct flight to Chicago. So, you buy the New York flight, get off in Chicago, and throw away the rest of your ticket. The result? Money saved.
But money lost by the airline. That's why skip lagging is expressly forbidden by major airlines. Now, despite the ban, many travelers practice the hack even though they risk having their travel plans canceled.
So here's the caution. If you bought a round-trip ticket, you could lose the return trip if discovered. If there's a schedule change after you buy your ticket, you may have to fly to a city you never intended. And if you are using a carry-on and overhead space is full, you and your luggage may end up going in different directions.
So, despite the risks, there's always a few that enjoy bending the rules. If you want some help in your rebellion, there is a website called skiplagged.com. For the rest of us, I think we'll just skip lagging.
Yeah, I'm just confused talking about it, Paul. I don't know if I could manage this. Could you?
No, I'm the one that always gets caught. You know, anytime I try to cut a corner, you go for a physical and you take off your glasses, take off your belt, take off your shoes, and you're still way too much. I just always get caught doing those things.
So you're the guy I see being escorted by two burly marshals out of the airport. You're that guy?
Often. I've made a lot of friends in security at airports. Well, we have listened to your special, and what's fascinating is the last time we talked, a couple of months ago,
yeah,
we knew about your stand-up career, but had never seen such a large chunk of it. You're good, Mr. Coleman.
Boy, are you good.
I hope you enjoyed it. You know, it's for people of a certain age.
Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily. I think that a lot of what you talked about was pretty much the American condition. I think anybody can relate to that.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that because I don't do any politics and I don't do any controversial material, so to speak. But I have just found that in this sort of dark malaise that we find ourselves in these days, people just want to be lifted out of their heads for an hour and just talk about our common experiences, and you leave a little closer to your neighbor. And it's not about trying to test the First Amendment or anything. It's just honestly about making people feel okay in this tough time.
I'm curious about developing this material at a time when it was kind of hard to put audiences together. And obviously the material was audience tested. It was very tight. So tell me about the process of how you put this show together.
Well, you made a great observation. You know, clubs weren't open during the pandemic. So I had written a lot, and I did the material to an audience of one, me, in my living room, and it was hysterical when I was doing it. And so once the pandemic was over and I got a chance to go out and do some longer sets, half hour to 45 minutes to test it, I just kind of honed it down. And then did it for the producer, and he thought it was ready to go. The reason why we were able to sell it to Tubi, our sales pitch was that, you know, Netflix has a lot of great, talented comics, but there is nothing in there for people of our age, like boomers and older. And we're really, I mean, you guys know this as well as I do. We're the audience that has probably more expendable capital and more, you know, we've saved more than Gen X and people younger than us. And so we're an audience that is not catered to with comedy specials. And I work clean for all intents and purposes. And lots of people love to watch stand-up specials, but some of them are really crude. And my demographic, my audience just appreciates if I don't do that. I came up in the business at a time when the talk shows, Carson and Merv Griffin and the others, expected you to be clean. And if you were working at a club like the Improv or the Comedy Store, and the talent coordinators from any of those shows, even if they weren't there to see you, if they saw you be blue and stuff on stage, it would sour them in their opinion of you, and it would be hard to get their attention again. So those of us of that era, the Seinfeld era and one class back from him, all kind of disciplined ourselves to work as clean as we can. And it's worked out to pay us off in the long run.
Yeah. Well, what has the reaction been to your special?
It's been really good. It got me this residency at the same place where I shot it. I shot that special at an iconic theater in Los Angeles called the El Portal Theater in North Hollywood. And I just love theaters with a great history. This theater started out as a vaudeville house back at the turn of the 20th century. And then people like Bob Hope and Red Buttons performed in there as vaudevillians in the early 20th century. Then it became a famous movie palace. I'm not a big fan of stand-up shows because I'm too picky about it when I watch it. But this was a beautifully shot show, and they shot it in the small theater at the El Portal, what they call the Marilyn Monroe Forum. And they named it the Marilyn Monroe Forum because Marilyn Monroe had had a relationship with JFK on the couch or anything there. It was because she went to the elementary school right across the street. So they named it the Marilyn Monroe Forum. And it's 100 seats, and it's perfect for me. So to answer your question in a really lengthy way, when the Tubi special launched, they liked the market that it appealed to. And so they booked me there once a month, and we just got extended. So we're going to be there through March. You know, when you work in comedy clubs in town, they're showcase clubs, meaning they have 5 or 6 or 7 comedians in a night and everybody does 10 or 15 minutes. It's harder to put together the ebb and flow of a long show under those circumstances. So I appreciate the fact that this is my own show. I bring an opening act for 15 minutes, and then I do an hour and 15 minutes. And that gives me a chance to stretch out and kind of plug things in together and see how they fit. And it's been great.
Well, what works for you as an opening act, Fritz? How do you choose an opening act?
Well, I look for a couple of things. Like, I like to have a lady because this theater is conscious of diversification and stuff. So I like to have a lady or a person of color, you know, somebody to mix it up, because it's an hour of a white guy whining. You have to have something that sort of offsets that at the beginning of the show. My next show is Sunday, November 26th. I'll be using Wendy Liebman, who's a wonderful lady comic. She had her own special on Showtime. She's been on Curb Your Enthusiasm. She's a really hysterical lady, and she'll come out and do 15 or 20 minutes.
What sorts of topics fall flat, Fritz, that all of the stuff that I saw you do, I could say, oh, yeah, that really hits home with me, and laugh about it? Are there any that people look at you and say, what the hell is he talking about?
Comedy is very subjective, and I can think it's very amusing. What I look for in my show is common experience and wordplay. I love wordplay. I was a big fan of George Carlin, who his great skill was his amazing command of the English language. And I love that. I love to tell weave little stories and have people follow me along. So if the topic lends itself to that, it works the best for me. What doesn't work for me is current events material for two reasons. I'm not the best at that. I mean, there are guys, all the late night guys, Colbert and and Kimmel and all those guys and The Daily Show are all, they have staffs of 14 writers who are coming up with this great topical material every day. So there's nothing I can sit in my living room and write that's going to be funnier than theirs. Plus, in a selfish way, the shelf life of current events material is very short. This is my fifth one-person show. And I designed this. I didn't design it, but I came up with a title for it. This format called a single topic monologue. My first one was about being a dad. It was called It's Me, Dad. My second one was about divorce. It was called The Reception because I narrated an imaginary wedding reception with pictures and everything. The third one was about the news called Tonight at 11. And I had video of newscasts and I did jokes about the business I was in. Then the fourth one I did was my first one about aging when I suddenly realized I was getting old called Defying Gravity. And this one, Unassisted Living, is me coming to full realization that I'm old and there's nothing I can do about it. So I just, you know, I come up with these single topics, and I have found that within that context, you don't have to do a joke every 15 seconds or whatever the rule is on the old Tonight Show. You had to get a punchline every 20 or 30 seconds, or, you know, they'd sit there and time you. You don't have to do that. And if you're telling a story and you're weaving words and sort of leading people from point A to point B, it doesn't, you don't need to have a snapper every 15 seconds. And then if it's well constructed, by the time you get to the end of that little trip, people laugh harder at the end of the joke. Mm-hmm. So it's a slightly different, it's a more relaxed way of doing it. And you know, truthfully, the funny parts are funnier if people don't get the rhythm of set up punchline all the way down the line. Mm.
You know, people our age, some of us look at what's going on and it's like a blur. Where do we look next? You so far have been able to make that funny so that we can at least acknowledge that we're all dealing with the same issues here.
Well, that's exactly the viewpoint I like the audience to come away with. Yeah. We're all in this together. I'm not trying to insult your intelligence or scrape your sensitivities. Let's just all enjoy some common experience and go home. And I'm glad you said that because that's exactly my goal when I do these things. So,
have you found that the COVID material holds up?
Yes, especially since we're still getting shots.
well, not only that, but it has affected our lives so deeply.
Yeah, no, and it's a thing that we'll probably never go through again. God willing, we won't go through again. And so the bulk of that material I still do. Because we're still recovering from that experience. Yep. You know, I have grandchildren who have not recovered from not being in a classroom, the structure of a classroom during COVID. And, you know, it kind of permanently skewed some of our habits. We have a problem in LA now where about 50% of the commercial workspace in downtown LA is now empty. Mm-hmm.
You know, I can remember going to the Comedy Store and hanging out outside would be maybe 20 comics practicing material on each other.
Yeah.
Have you found a substitute for that?
No, I had a very odd start. When I came out here, I had that camaraderie the first couple of years I was here. But once I got the weather job, I came out here in 1980. I became a paid regular at the Comedy Store. Then in 82, I started my weather job. So I was doing what a lot of comics didn't do, which is I was going to regular employment during the week. Now, I had a break between the 6 and 11 o'clock news. So I was still doing sets during the week. I was doing two or three shows a week at the Improv and the Comedy Store. So I was still performing, but I didn't have the hangout, the fellowship of the other comics. I have many friends, obviously, but it just wasn't that same thing. But, you know, comics talk about it being like boot camp in the military, this bonding that you go through in the early stages of your career. You can't describe to other people. And you can only go through it once in your life, but it's a very close fellowship.
So give our audience the information about how they can access your special.
Okay, Tubi's free. It's one of those channels like, and everybody has it. Most cable systems have it. It's free. It's an advertiser-supported cable streaming service. It's like Hulu, where they have limited numbers of commercials, one at the beginning and one at the end. It's not irritating at all, and it allows you to have it for free, and you can access it on your computer on the internet as well. So it's an hour long. Tubi has maybe the largest collection of old movies in the history of the world, as well as our show. And so check it out. I hope you like it.
Like what you've been hearing? How about sharing the joy with your friends? We can always use more listeners. There are more episodes on the way, so stay tuned and keep howling at the moon.